Hello and welcome to another episode of the All Trader Podcast. My name is Wandile Sishi.
And I'm George Mini.
And it's been two weeks since we've actually sat down together because of, you know, I was sick last week. I don't know if you know this. I'm sure you kind of know this because we didn't have the show. Yeah.
Yeah, well, not just because we didn't have the show, but what was the matter?
So the doctor on my doctor's note, it just said viral infection of the throat specifically. Okay. So I don't know. There's kind of a flu that's going around.
Did you lose your taste?
No, I didn't. And that was one of the things that the doctor, that's why I was off for so long because my symptoms were very similar to COVID. To COVID essentially.
To another.
Yeah. And she just didn't want to risk it at all.
Is that the word we don't say anymore?
We do not use that word. We've moved on. It didn't happen. So yeah, I had some of the symptoms, similar to COVID. So the doctors just didn't want to risk it. And I was on exactly the same.
I've heard of a couple of people now being incredibly sick. One of my friends lost his taste. I said to him, "Did you have the corona?"
Mm.
He said, "No, I didn't have the corona." I said, "Have you been tested?" "No, he hasn't been tested." I said, "But you've lost your taste."
That's like the number one symptom.
You know, that was the thing that seemed to be most common through the last two to three years.
Yeah.
But he didn't get tested. He's fine now. He said he was sick as a dog.
I've never had the corona, so
not that you know of.
Not that I know of, but I mean, this is the first time I've been sick in about 3 years, and I didn't have any of the
normal stuff,
like the serious COVID symptoms, such as like losing my taste or smell, interesting, and any of that. Yeah, but we're back, and so much has happened in the last 2 weeks.
You leave, and Max Verstappen becomes world champion.
Yeah, that's the first thing that's happened, and let me just say, he was announced as the champion, but something has happened in the last day which might impact that.
Oh, no. Tell me. Because I was on, watching the race.
Yes.
I was like, please, I don't want to deny him the championship.
Exactly.
But let it go to the end. Just let it go to the end. And then Leclerc goes and screws up that last
In the
corner.
Very last lap. Frickin' in the last corner.
In the last corner, he goes and he puts it sideways.
The most,
bizarre thing.
Ironic and so kind of,
but a typical Leclerc.
Typical
Leclerc. In Leclerc fashion, he goes and screws it up when he's under pressure.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I saw the tyres at the end of the race, and I mean, that Ferrari's tyres were completely finished compared to Max's tyres, for instance.
Yeah, but he held it together for so many laps. Why not just one more corner?
That pressure, it got to him.
If he just stayed on the track, he would have had to just have a straight line race to the finish line, right?
Yeah,
because of 100%. The last one, like a straight line race. And I don't think that Red Bull would have had enough speed to get past him.
No, I also disagree with that. The downforce on that Ferrari is
just phenomenal.
World,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So what's happened?
Which is weird, because in the corner he lost it. So I don't even been following the story, but essentially, the 2021 budget cap. So in 2021, the FIA put in a new budget cap. Mm. Yes. So before this, for some context to anybody who hasn't been following F1 before 2021, the teams with the most money could essentially just spend $500 million, some teams, in making the best car. Mm. This can be extremely problematic when you have a team like Williams, for instance, who has a lot less money. For competition's sake, it makes sense that a budget cap is enforced by everyone, or for all the teams. Mm. And it started in 2021. So the last season that we just had, where things got a bit shaky, and it essentially impacts the next 3 years in terms of development of vehicles. So the date was moved 4 times, and yesterday, this is the 10th of October.
What date?
The date of the FIA giving the tickets to the teams to say, yes, you complied
with the
budget.
Regulation, yeah.
Exactly. It was moved 3 times before yesterday.
Yeah.
And we finally got the results of this, and two teams, I think it was Red Bull and Aston Martin, were the only two teams that breached this.
They did.
So this impacts 2021, a year where things were a bit shaky.
So both his world championships are...
Both of his world champions are now questionable. And this has got nothing to do with Max.
Which means Leclerc's in the lead.
Which means, exactly. So for Ferrari, this is huge. For Mercedes, this is huge.
Yeah, because for Mercedes comes second now.
Yeah. I mean, I think we did terribly this year, so it is what it is. But for a team like Ferrari, who hasn't won in 15 years, this is exactly what... And they played by the rules this time. I think they've been questionable in previous years.
Yeah.
But they played by the rules this time. I think they deserve, or investigation needs to actually be done to find out what was...
So now what's the outcome?
So the outcome is... And once again, I don't think Red Bull's in, you know, I think it's they're in their rights to go investigate this and make sure that, you know, because they're saying that it was definitely below. So, you know, I think it's important that we give them the chance to prove that they were innocent. Mm-hmm. But if they are in breach of less than 5%, the kind of the punishment for this is either deduction of the driver's and constructor's points. So, and this goes back to 2021.
Wow.
And this year. Suspension of, you know, a few stages. At this point, it's done for 2022. They've already won, so fine. And then limitations on ability to conduct any testing for the next few years and a reduction of the cost cap for future years. But that first point there of deduction of points for drivers and constructors, that has some serious ramifications for the last 2 years and for Max specifically. So, you know, we'll see what happens. And they could also just pay a fee, a settlement to kind of
deal with it. That's not fair.
And I do think it's super unfair if that happens.
No, that would be a load of rubbish, honestly. Mm. Like, if somebody has won a championship, and I would say this about Ferrari as well, and it's possible to just pay a fine. That's a get out of jail free card.
100%.
Because the top teams have the money to pay the fines. You might as well just plan to pay the fine.
You take the 2 years and you pay a fine of, let's say, 50 million rand or something, or 50 yes. million USD. You don't develop for the next 2 years, but the last 2 years have happened already. And they were really important years for, you know, a lot of teams.
No. I think if this is the case, that means that double world championship is not fair.
Yeah. And I do think Max gets the brunt of this because he has been as a driver, easily the best right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think the car has played a big part
for sure
to that. You know, look at the newbies on the block: Russell and
Lando,
and Lando Norris and Leclerc.
Mm.
Those guys, I think, have driven almost equally to Max.
Mm. Mm.
And if it hadn't been for the car, one of the three, maybe even Hamilton, mm-hmm. would have been in contention for number one or number two.
So Hamilton said, it's funny, he said that if they had 300, I think it's £300,000 extra last year,
they would have won.
That would have been the difference. And they're saying that this breach, allegedly, the FIA is not going to tell us how much it was, but it's about 5%.
Well, if you look at 145 million, right?
It's about 5.7 euros, which is huge.
5.7 million euros.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's huge.
But that's big money.
Yeah. It's huge, huge, huge. It's the difference. And Hamilton's saying only 300,000 euros would be the
differentiator.
Point. Yeah. So for the integrity of the sport, because I'm a fan of F1 first, I really, really hope that justice is served, whatever that looks like. I'm not saying take away points.
You know
or
what?
Whatever,
I think they're gonna do the right thing. And the reason I think they're gonna do the right thing is because the last couple of decisions, since that other dude,
Michael Massey
is out.
Yeah.
Okay. Their decisions have been really consistent.
They have been, yeah.
Really consistent.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not for the five second penalty that Leclerc got on that last corner, but did stuff up.
Yes.
And he deserved the penalty.
Yeah. 100%.
He got 5 seconds. Eh?
5 seconds, yeah, correct.
He did deserve the penalty because he should have been behind Perez mm-hmm. at that moment in time when he lost it.
Yes.
Because what if there was a barrier there? You mm-hmm. know, he would have been, you know, probably more than behind yeah. Perez. So I think the FIA's decision making over the last stint since Massey is out has been consistent.
Yeah.
I think that maybe there was a problem with how Massey made decisions. You know, but you can't really fault them. They've been really consistent. I mean, look 100%. At the grid penalties they issued a couple of races ago.
Yeah.
Look at the I think who got a 5 second penalty? 5 second penalty before Leclerc in the previous race. Somebody got a 5 second penalty and also dropped a place. Doesn't matter, but yeah. But their decision making has been consistent. Look at how they showing what is it, black and white flags to people yep. that breach track limits.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they've been consistent.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was Leclerc was on the line.
Yep.
during
I think it was yeah, I don't exactly saw him, but yeah,
it was on the line, and he wasn't off the line, so so he didn't get his lap time deleted.
Yeah.
So they've been really, really consistent, and hopefully that's going to now shine through. And it might be a different team who makes decisions in the race versus the FIA at the top.
Yep.
But I'm hoping that they do the right thing. Yeah.
Matteo from Ferrari has already spoken up this morning. He was already like, Leclerc should be number one because
of course he's
currently the two
that.
Red Bull. Yeah, of course. Yeah. But the two Red Bulls are currently one and two, and if they have breached it, yeah, I mean it does put a stain in. All the work that they've done, because I think they've done a phenomenal job in developing a fantastic car and being consistent over the years to the point where they're now dominant. But if the dominance is as a result of breaking rules, that's something that should be
penalized.
Yeah,
but punitive penalization, not financial.
Yeah,
I don't think it should be financial.
Yeah,
it should be punitive.
Yeah,
take the championships away.
Yeah.
Because that hurts more than anything else. Don't stop them from developing for the next 2 years. That's kind of like, that's trying to regulate the future. Don't do that. I don't think that's the right decision.
Because you still keep your championships then. And it's like
your championship's there and you're going to lose. You're not really going to be able to compete for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of taking you out of the game for the next 2 years. Rather just take what you got away for the last 2 years as a constructor and as a, as a racer. Max is not going to be happy, but hey, he was part of the problem.
Yeah. I think it also sends a bad message to the teams who were within the lines. Some of the bigger teams like a Mercedes-Benz or Ferrari or an Alpine or McLaren, the manufacturers. Mm. It tells, I think it's important for them to feel like they are playing
protected,
by the rules and protected.
Yes.
And it's not just a money thing that kind of gets you out of things. Because if they leave, then the sport completely just
goes.
And
we want to get more manufacturers into the sport. Porsche,
BMW,
Audi.
Exactly.
They all come as manufacturers because that's really where F1, I think, thrives.
Yeah.
Yes, Red Bull is cool and whatever the case may be, but it's not really a car manufacturer.
Yeah.
We want the Mercedes, we want the Ferraris, we want the McLarens, we want the actual manufacturers there.
Yeah.
Wrong decision here, and you might see the manufacturers run for the heels.
100%. But let's see what happens. Innocent until proven guilty. I hope it's not the case. But this is going to be, I think it's going to be a few months before we get to a verdict.
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, they've got to kind of like get to it. Surely they've done this audit. That's why they could give the certificates.
Yep.
It's like before the next race. Come on.
I don't think it's going to be that simple.
When's the next race?
When is the next race? I'm not sure if it's this week or the week after, but
I can tell you because I've
you have the internet.
No, I've subscribed to the race calendar.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so if one has a race calendar, you hit subscribe and it goes into your diary.
Oh, nice.
Which is pretty cool. So obviously this weekend there's nothing. It is United States on the 22nd of October.
Nice. What's a COTA?
COTA. Cool.
Circuit of the Americas,
Armaco.
And then before we leave F1, I don't know if you saw this. I think you might have seen it, but apparently there's talks about a Grand Prix in Soweto.
Yes, I think that's very, 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 very full street race through the streets of Nazareth and that area.
Yeah.
I think Nazareth needs a bit of a revival.
Yeah, that's kind of died after the World Cup,
It's. I hope it doesn't. This will stop it from becoming a white elephant.
And I
think it's a brilliant idea.
Mm.
It's a brilliant idea to put on a proper street race like Singapore, like Monaco, through the streets of Soweto. Through that stadium.
Mm.
That would be
it would be insane.
Epic.
Yeah.
I mean, that stadium can house, I think, 80,000 or 90,000 people.
Mm. Mexico did the same thing. I mean, also their race is, it's a circuit that goes through kind of like this auditorium bits, which is really, really cool, yeah.
And we've got the infrastructure, we've got the road transport, we've got the bus transport, we've got the train transport to support.
Exactly.
I mean, we did the 2010 World Cup there.
Yeah.
So it is very possible. And a lot of international music artists play there.
Exactly.
And the infrastructure is there to support parking, to support transport, to support pick up and go, all the securities. I think we should do it.
It's a perfect venue.
I think it's the perfect venue.
Let's see what happens. Obviously, developing story. We just want to see the race come to South Africa. I think that's kind of what everyone ultimately wants.
Mm-hmm.
And that could solve a lot of the issues that we're having with, you know, the other potential venues, because you, like you say, the infrastructure is definitely there.
Well, apparently corporates are getting involved now. So it's not just because, you know, the government has to spend a lot of money on 100%. Infrastructure in order to get a F1 race on.
Yeah.
But if the capitalist part of South Africa gets involved, I think we can put it off.
100%. Moving on. So I don't know if you read the story, but one of our studio managers sent me this article. I think it was Reno, about essentially there's an aging fleet problem that's happening locally as well as globally. And essentially, because of the rising costs of living, buckled with the fact that cars are now reaching an average age of about 9 years, there's some regulations in South Africa, you know, that we'll talk about it, but there's some regulations in South Africa which could potentially impact people actually maintaining their cars and getting penalized for the fact that their cars are a bit older.
Well, before we get to the regulation, I think the reality is that this aging fleet is, first of all, going to accelerate for two reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One, you mentioned it, rising cost of living, right? Housing cost is going up. Interest rates are going up.
Petrol, food. Yeah,
so living costs are going up. The result of that is holding onto your car for longer,
mm-hmm.
right? Which plays right into what you're saying, holding onto your car for longer. Potentially, also less demand for used cars, mm-hmm. even less demand for new cars.
Mm.
What does that do? Less demand means lower prices.
Mm.
So the price bubble, I think the price bubble might burst in the next 12 months. Mm. So anybody sitting on large stock of used cars, if you're not moving those used cars, I think you're going to be sitting on a time bomb.
New and used, or specifically used?
Specifically used.
Okay.
New is a very bit of a different world, but particularly used, because used you're going to have bought too high. Mm. You're going to have to reduce the price to sell, which means you could take a burn.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's the price bubble for used cars. I think that's looming.
Mm.
I always say what happens in Europe and America gives us pneumonia. So, when they sneeze, we get pneumonia.
Yeah.
So we've got to really be cognizant of that fact. And in America at the moment, used car prices are falling like a stone.
Yeah.
That's going to come here, I reckon. And then that's going to get exacerbated with the switch to electric and hybrid.
Because the price is just so much higher. So
people are going to be more interested in hybrid and electric, which means that even less demand for petrol used cars or fuel.
Okay.
Petrol and diesel used cars, which is going to further exacerbate it. All this plays into an aging fleet, and I've been saying it for a while.
You have been saying it for a while. So do you think that this is, because, you know, I think I haven't looked at the data yet myself, but agencies globally have looked at it and they're saying that it's at that point now where it is 9. So do you think that that is the case? We're seeing a serious problem that's now at our doorstep.
I think it's coming.
Okay.
And it's probably why a regulation 138 has been passed.
Yeah.
Okay. So regulation 138, what does it say? The testing of vehicles older than 10 years every 2 years.
Yeah.
That's what the regulation says, right? Yes. So that's not a regulation that's on the table. That's a regulation that's actually in place.
Okay.
Right? But the second part of the regulation hasn't been executed, which is the minister has to set a start date.
Of when now it's law that if your car's older than 10 years, every two years you need to go and test.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, but he could do that at any moment because the regulation 138 gives him the authority to
be like, okay, it's time.
It's time. Let's do this tomorrow.
Yeah.
So this is a looming regulation. It's not like it has to go through the lawmakers.
Mm.
It's done. So when the minister sets that date, anybody with a car older than 10 years is going to have to make sure that it's roadworthy every 2 years.
Mm.
And now it's going to place more burden on the consumer.
On the consumer, exactly.
Yeah.
I
think it's a good thing to have cars checked every 2 years. Periodically, especially older cars, because it can become a hazard, right?
For sure.
But there's a deeper underlying problem. And that deeper underlying problem is not being dealt with, and that's the economy itself.
Mm, Look, if a scenario, and right now I'm putting on my tinfoil hat right now, but in a scenario where EVs are now here, this is a great way to kind of get additional tax. Is you get people to, you know, why hasn't the minister put this in place yet? Do you think it's just something that is not important yet? Or do you think it's a regulation that actually makes a lot of sense?
What regulation? An EV?
No. Making sure that people after 10 years have to go and make sure their cars are roadworthy. Because from 2014, this regulation has been in place. So why isn't the minister?
I mean, I don't know. I can't say for sure. I can speculate.
Yeah.
And the only reason for me could be nervousness. Nervousness around the impact on the economy.
Okay.
Because, you know, the government doesn't want to negatively impact the economy. What's coming up in 24?
The elections.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't want to kind of shake the bed and be less popular as a result.
So, you know, ministers want to be elected.
For sure.
So you want to make decisions that, you know, get your next, your next term.
Yeah.
Now, I'm speculating. I don't know. It could be nervousness. Yeah. It could be as a result of, the next cycle of, elections. I don't know.
Yeah.
But why hasn't the minister put the date down?
Yeah, I mean, another thing is the average age is not yet at 10 years. That's another thing that maybe could potentially be.
It could be that the average age is not, and that this is going to come into place when the average age hits 10 years.
Yeah, kind of like a safety net regulation. When
it's kind of like we've put it in place, we're waiting. Yeah. You know, to see whether the fleet ages more.
Okay. Yeah.
It could be that. So, yeah. but we're speculating. It could be any of that. It remains to be seen. Don't know. I mean, I think it's a good thing. Even now?
Yeah, for sure.
Put it in place. You know, have 2-year-old cars, 10-year-old cars checked every 2 years. It's a safety thing.
There is some good news with this. Rights repair was kind of passed after years of many agencies trying to get it through the door.
But remember, rights repair is a recommendation. It's not...
Is it not yet?
Not to my knowledge.
As far as I know, people do have a lot more agency now.
Yes, no. It's been implemented by many, many players within the industry.
Yeah.
But it was a recommendation and guidelines, which people have taken on board.
Yes.
And some OEMs have taken on board.
I know some OEMs are very much, making sure that it's credited, yada, yada, yada. There's kind of nuances to it. But the good news is, you know, consumers do have the agency now. Whereas before, it could have been a real problem for a lot of people. So there's ways around it. Let's see what happens. But like you're saying, I think it's definitely a positive thing to make sure that cars that are old should be checked. It's in the best interest of everyone. Last thing is, it's Motoring Month. And you recently went to Smart Mobility, and we're discussing it a little bit earlier now. But was there anything, you know, you've had an EV now for about 2 years, and we're about to launch the hybrid report as well, because the EV report is now sitting on reports.org.za. But, you know, with regards to hybrid vehicles and EVs and the adoption rates of electric vehicles, are you seeing, based off your experience at the conference, that there is a significant change in people's mindsets? And do you think the South Africa is ready for, you know, for EVs?
So from the actual survey itself, one of the things that struck me, there was a few things that struck me, but one of the things that struck me was the environmental advantages of owning an EV have declined.
Okay.
As an advantage. It's still the top advantage, but it has declined. I think the environmental factors in the mind of the consumer are driven largely by government and Elon Musk.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's been driven largely by government and governments
as like a marketing job to kind of push EVs.
To push greener, because I mean let's be honest, it is better for the environment, right?
Yeah.
But there is a crossover point. It takes a lot more energy to create an electric vehicle, to actually put one on the road.
Mm.
Okay. And you have to drive the electric vehicle for a period of it's a number of years before you get to equal a greenhouse gas emission from the manufacturer of the vehicle to be equal to driving an ICE vehicle.
Okay.
Because manufacturer of an ICE vehicle has a much lower greenhouse gas emission a production point of view. EV is incredibly high because of the mining and getting the lithium and getting the cobalt and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So the amount of greenhouse gas initially is very high for an EV versus a ICE vehicle.
Is that an economies of scale kind of issue? Is this, you know, because I'm
it's
assuming
just the pure energy and it's mainly related to the battery,
okay,
right? To manufacture the vehicle. As you drive those vehicles, obviously the EV has zero GHG.
Yeah.
Zero greenhouse gases. Very little, maybe the tires. Okay. Whereas the ICE vehicle now expands as you drive.
As you keep driving it, yeah.
There's a crossover point there. The EV is definitely over its lifetime a lot
cleaner. Greener, yeah.
Right. So there is an environmental positive. But what our survey showed is that the positives in the mind of the consumer,
yeah,
for environmental factors in owning an EV or to own an EV is lower year on year.
What's growing? Do you recall?
Well, the factors that actually mean something to a consumer, which is lifestyle.
The lifestyle and price. Driving. Okay. And also the... Okay, that makes sense.
So I mean, in time, if you bought an EV, right? Mm. If you fantasized about an EV, it's probably because of the environmental things.
Initially, that was kind of the...
Yes. But when you want to make the switch, the things that are going to be important to you...
Does this make my life better?
Yes. It's going to be lifestyle, it's going to be price.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, those things become the most important things when the rubber hits the road.
Yeah,
and subset of consumers make the environmental factors the most important thing. So environmental factors are very important, but I think it's a downstream consequence of actually getting the bums in the seats in an EV.
Okay,
it's just better tech. It's easier to drive. It's nicer to drive. It hones a lot more sensors that you didn't realize you had that was masked by the engine noise and the exhaust noise. So that was the first thing, was the environmental factors have reduced in importance to consumers. And what we're seeing is that EVs are just simpler and more efficient technology.
Yeah.
And they last longer.
Are more people driving EVs and experiencing them?
In South Africa, more and more, much more and more. I mean, we're seeing a doubling of both search and sales in EVs. But you should know this.
I do. Just a little bit. I mean, so, more experience.
So another thing that came out of the survey was the cost of an EV is becoming a much bigger disadvantage.
Okay.
So that's where environmental factors are moving to cost as a disadvantage.
Do you think that's a visibility thing in terms of people understanding exactly how much it costs? Because I think a lot of people just didn't know how much EVs
now people want one, but they didn't realize how much it costs.
Okay.
And now
they're kind of realizing.
It's a big factor. And it's also highlighted that range anxiety and battery life are less of a concern.
Okay.
It's significantly reduced, which means we're doing a good job with education.
Yes. Because a lot of people were saying... Well, unrealistic, really, with regards to expectations of EVs.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, those are a couple of the big bucket items. If I look at, maybe one last one, and that is brand.
Okay.
I mean, there's quite a number of these, but that is brand, and this one was kind of quite an eye opener for me.
Mm.
Brand is the second least important thing to a consumer when considering an EV. Okay. So if you think about that for a second.
Internal combustion engines is the opposite, right? It's brand plays a heavy, heavy role.
Yes.
In terms of you choosing to buy that vehicle.
Exactly. So, I mean, my decision to buy an EV was about availability, price, technology, build quality, aesthetics, and then brand.
Actual products in terms of what it does.
What it does.
The capabilities of it.
The what it is itself, right? Yeah. That was my personal decision. And it's come out in this in the survey. So what does that tell you? The top recognized brands shouldn't be surprised if they're disrupted.
Mm.
Because if you as an OEM are relying on your brand completely to get you across the line, it's not going to happen. Mm. Consumers aren't looking at your EV that way.
Mm.
They're looking at your EV from a functional point of view and from those other things. So Tesla's brand equity in the mind of the South Africans is reducing. That was another thing that I noticed. And the introduction of our education, I think, is building in South Africa.
Mm.
So for me, that is a recipe for a small startup, potentially, maybe an import, maybe a locally manufactured EV.
Yes, I think that's a big one there. There's opportunity there.
There's a massive opportunity to disrupt the bigger brands.
Yeah.
With EVs, because brand is not the most important thing when considering an EV.
Ultimately, times are changing, and the way things were done is not going to be the way things are going to be done in the future. But yeah, that's all the time we have for. Thank you so much for another episode, George. But yeah, we'll see you next week.
Thank you, and go Leclerc.
And we'll see. You might just be right this time.